I don't know that I'd call it specifically a reincarnation, but I would call it a visitation. It showed me that there's so much that we don't know about what spirits and souls are capable of.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with Helena, Montana native Annie Canole, whose debut book, The Spring, A Mythic Memoir, is an episodic narrative of loss and the grief that follows. Photographs accompany short, lyric vignettes in the spring, inviting readers into Canole's dreams and dreamlike realities. This book is a process, a transformation, the unfolding story of life after death. Annie Canole is a writer and artist living in the Mojave Desert. She was born and raised in the Rocky Highlands of Helena, Montana. Annie received a BA from the New School, where she studied art and philosophy, and an MFA in creative writing from University of California, Riverside, Palm Desert. Her essays have appeared in Writers Resist, Zim Zum, and The Rumpus. Annie, welcome to The Right Question.
Hi, Lauren. So good to be here.
So Annie, I'd like to begin with a question I ask or have asked a number of authors who have appeared on this show. And that question is, what does the phrase or the idea of the American West, what does that idea mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the American West is, to me, it means a place where there's the sublime and the beautiful are always present. And the expansiveness of the American West, it's all that. It's the terror and the beauty. It's a place of struggle and repose. And it's a place where we're all trying to, I think right now, figure out how to live. The idea of the American West to me in literature and art is something I'm working with in my writing. For a long time, I was just reading as much as I could of Western and Montana writers, trying to see how they were engaging with this landscape and this sense of place. And the work that I did with The Spring, I think, engages the landscape in a way I think that I was wanting to see more of in the literature of the American West, which was in a way where our inner experience is engaged with our external landscapes. And I wanted that to come through in the writing. And I think I feel that most distinctly when I'm in Yellowstone, which I think is why many of my animal encounters in Yellowstone are in this book. It's because it is a place where, you know, the earth is releasing pent-up energy. And, you know, there's both life and death in Yellowstone. It's like a painting itself. And anyway, I guess getting back to writing about the American West or writing within it, I am interested in animism and in weaving in the dream life of how the dream life that comes through, you know, perhaps knowing more animals than people, having more spiritual encounters with animals than we do with people. And I think that's the experience of many people who live in this beautiful place. And I'm interested in exploring our experience of the American West in that way through literature and language and photography.
There's a piece early on in the book that has you in conversation with the painter, your partner who has passed. You're talking about what animals you would be if you were animals. And so in that piece specifically, there is a conflation, or at least a comparison, between the animal and the human realm. And thinking about animals and death specifically, so many people claim to see or have seen their loved ones who have passed in the form of animals. And I'm wondering whether you found yourself or you find yourself believing that the painter was reincarnated in this way. I know that the spring and the animals in this book exist as metaphors too, but I'm wondering whether that's how you came to these narratives, that you saw the painter, his essence perhaps, his soul in these animals, in their appearances to you.
Yeah, the first time that happened, actually, it was a communal experience of recognizing the painter's essence and perhaps spirit in an animal. It was actually at his memorial ceremony, which took place at St. Timothy's Chapel above Georgetown Lake. And there was this gorgeous, noble moose greeting people on the road up to the chapel, which is on a mountaintop. And people remarked about it even at the altar during the ceremony. They talked about the moose. It was something that sat with many people. People were astonished. My grandmother made the sign of the cross when the moose looked her in the eye, and she still talked about it. I personally didn't see the moose, but it was clear that something was coming through, and most people believed that it was the painter. And then I began to see him in other forms, in the dragonfly and in bluebird specifically. And those animals kept coming back in different ways throughout the book. And I don't know that I'd call it specifically a reincarnation, but I would call it a visitation. And I think it showed me that there's so much that we don't know about the other side and what spirits and souls are capable of.
Are you still encountering animals in this way? Are they still visitations? Is it still the same? There seems to be kind of a ritualistic nature to them. Is this still happening, or has the spring sort of ended those encounters for you?
No, they are still happening. I've had a couple dragonfly encounters this summer, one of which happened right after I did a reading of the book in Helena. A dragonfly just zoomed right for my face and almost hit my glasses and then zoomed off. And that was just like an hour after I read the book to a bunch of people who knew him. And even last year, I had picked some flowers for the painter on his birthday. And as I was carrying them into my house to put them in a vase, a dragonfly came and landed on the flowers. So the story goes on in a beautiful way, and often in a very comforting way.
Well, let's hear from the spring. So I'd love it if you could read from the book a piece titled Deer and Lion, which appears in the book's first few pages. Part of the reason why I wanted you to read it is because of the sounds that these animals make. And it's always an interesting translation from page to the audio. So thank you for indulging me that.
Deer and Lion. With the fire gone to ash and snake on my mind, I enter my tent and sit in the empty space between thin walls. The painter is usually here taking off his boots, but today he is picking morels in another land. My ears tune to every rustle in the grass. Snake is out beyond the cottonwoods, gliding around the rocks. Her promise keeps me from sleep. A high-pitched cry erupts, echoing like a symphony in the wind. It's the cry of lion, reverberating as a hiss scream, going toe-to-toe with deer. Row! Hiss! Tear! Huff! 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 Row! Deer, you do not fight. Your huff is quiet and determined, giving, 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 and releasing to the sky.
So So I want to return to the writing, the craft of this book. Since my first reading of the spring, I've been trying to characterize your style in a way that doesn't seem reductive to it. And the only way that I've thought to do that is to call it kind of like condensed or distilled. Because not only are you working in what might be called like a low diction, but you know, for most people, it's pretty easy to understand. You're also distilling your experiences. And you spoke to this earlier, this idea that you're not waxing poetic about the feelings that you were having or, you know, every experience that you were going through during this grief process. And the simple yet like very dreamlike nature of your writing feels very new to what I'm going to call the grief canon that I know of, those books of poetry and creative writing that deal specifically in grief. And so I'm wondering if this is a voice or a style that is characteristic of all of your writing, or whether this writing took on this particular voice and this style for this work specifically.
Yeah, I would say that it is emblematic of much of my writing, but the voice of this book is specific to the spring. I think that the story I'm telling is a very intimate story, and there's a real sense of close conversation that's happening here, and this distillation, working to keep a story very much in the mythic realm, while also telling it in a deeply personal way, was what was important to me. And I think in that sense, I was able to convey the emotions in a very strong way without overwhelming with a lot of details of detritus.
To me, in my reading of the spring, the painter's death seemed a catalyst for the way in which you approached and interacted with these animals and the ways in which this philosophy grew. It felt like the painter's death was a starting point. But my question then is, was that actually the case? Or were you encountering animals prior to the painter's death and having these experiences, and so that philosophy was already built in and the spring was just a logical product of those mindsets that were already in place?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that my mystical experiences with the animals began happening after the painter's death, and certainly because some of them felt like visitations. And so then once some of them felt like visitations, I was looking at other animal experiences and looking for the ways that they were, you know, communicating from the other side with me. But on the other hand, there is a passage in there where the painter and I see an owl for the first time, and that was near White Sulphur Springs. And later we asked our friend what the owl meant, and she said death. And so then after that, we continued to sort of tell each other animal stories and discuss possible meanings of our encounters with animals. In the book, the painter tells me of his first encounter with a bear up in the Pentlers, and there's a twin owl sighting. And so we began this dialogue of telling animal stories. And the last time I saw the painter, he told me the story of Frog and taking Frog to the spring so that the frog would live. And that specific last animal story that he told me seemed integral to whatever fable was emerging after his death and helped me make sense of his death. And, you know, in many ways, I had to look at that story and believe that he went on to be renewed.
So you've given a few interviews for this book so far, and I'm wondering if having to explain your decisions and explain your grief and explain
maybe more explicitly the moments with the painter in the book. I'm wondering if that has changed, well, your relationship to the book, one, but also if it's changed your perception of your relationship with the painter.
Well, I believe that in this book and talking about it, I think the person who was the painter begins to take on his own mythical quality. Even just by being called simply the painter, he becomes mythic. By talking about him metaphorically jumping into a spring, he becomes mythic. And there's something about making a very tragic and devastating story and experience into a story that I've been told is beautiful does change my relationship to my grief and to that time in my life and to perhaps who the painter and I are now. Maybe both of us are now existing in the realm of myth, and there's some comfort and relief in that.
Yeah, I mean, hearing you say that and talk about that, the book's subtitle, A Mythic Memoir, it feels so much more present to me. I can, explain the reasons why it makes sense to me, you know, but I like thinking about the ways in which writing this memoir, because it is true to your life, that the process of writing it actually became the mythic quality of it, or the process into myth. I think that makes a lot of sense. And like, you know, I just said, it is memoir and it is true to life. And so this painter was real. He was a real person. He was a painter. His work has now outlived his body. And because the spring is so invested in memory, given, you know, memoir, what effect did the painter's, or do the painter's existing paintings have on your creative work now? Or I guess I'm going to rephrase that, because I feel like what I really want to know is what effect his paintings had on the writing of the spring.
I don't know that I would say that any specific painting had an effect on the writing of the spring, but there is a painting that I come back to in my mind when I think of the spring, and it's called Mill Pond, and it's a painting of two nude figures in the moonlight and a horse bathing by a pond or perhaps a spring. It was a painting he did after our first summer in Montana together. It was a watercolor painting, and it's one of my favorites. And I think it could easily be in relation to this work, that image.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with Helena, Montana native Annie Knoll, author of The Spring, A Mythic Memoir. I'm Lauren Korn. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Thinking about visual art, I want to talk about the photographs that inhabit these pages and sort of create this really holistic piece of art. And they're not necessarily paired with a single piece. There is obviously like proximal relationships from pieces to hopping from one piece to a photograph, but there doesn't seem, at least to me, to be a pattern to some of their appearances. And my question is not which came first, the fables or the photographs. I don't think I want that to be my question. I think the question I'm more interested in is, what is the role of visual art to your artistic practice? Does it guide your writing practice?
I would say they're completely intertwined. Even when I was in undergraduate at the New School, I was studying both art, visual art, and writing and philosophy. And I'm actually really proud that they all came together in this book. I think I always felt like I had to choose one path or another, writing or visual arts. And it's been really delightful for them to find a marriage in this form and in this piece, specifically The Spring. I don't think it could exist just as prose. And of course, the photographs wouldn't be as rich without the poetics as well. But yeah, it was through the photographs, actually. I had started taking the pictures of the animals to document them, to understand them through my grief process, because I did feel like they were telling me a story. And then when I had enough photographs and I went to an artist residency, I showed the photographs because I knew some kind of art was emerging from these photographs of the animals. And then eventually I began writing the prose as well. And at some point it became a dance between the two, where once I was very consciously working on this project and knew that it was prose and photography, every time that I had a snake encounter, I would make sure I both had taken photographs of it and sat down to write about it right afterwards.
You know, The Spring really does read like a life changed. It does read as though this, you know, was life changing for you. And anyone who has lost someone close to them, whether it be a partner like the painter or a parent or a close friend, knows that death and grief really, really changes you sort of explicitly. What was your relationship to death? And that's a very broad question, so I apologize. But what was your relationship to death prior to the painter's passing? What experience you had prior to his passing? Had you experienced a close friend's or a close loved one's death before, so you sort of were prepared for like the process that ensued? Or was this sort of all new to you?
I was in no way prepared for the process that ensued. My stepmother had passed 2 years prior, and that was a big tragedy in my family. She was in her early 60s and had suffered from cancer for 2 years. And yes, there was a lot of grieving around that, but there was also a lot of grieving leading up to it. But then the painter, it was unexpected, his death. And he was 33. And, you know, it's what therapists called a complicated grief for me and for many people who loved him. And living beyond that, I felt like I had died as well. And the best metaphor I could come up with at the time was that we both got in a car accident and he died, and I was left in a full body cast. Neither of us were in a car accident, but that was the best metaphor I could come up with to articulate what it felt like at that time. And emotionally, I was in a full body cast. It was a long process. And, you know, I talked to different people, specifically people who had lost people in very tragic ways, and they would say, it'll take 2 years, 3 years, maybe five. And at the time I couldn't believe it. It was hard to comprehend. I was 32 and spending most of my 30s in some kind of, you know, state of paralysis from grief. It was hard to comprehend. But I moved through it. I moved to the desert, and that was very healing for me. I think the desert is a place where death is very, very visible. You know, there aren't a lot of things growing here, and the things that do grow and live here have to work very hard at it. And I felt like the desert was a place that really helped me come back to life again between the animals and the sense of peace and timelessness that this landscape gave me, as well as being away from, you know, constant encounters with my memories of my life before and Montana specifically.
Will you read another piece in the book? I'd love it if you read one of the final pieces, the final spring poem, The Spring.
Sure. The Spring. One snowy afternoon, as the sun keeled toward the horizon, the painter and I took a trip to the boiling river of Yellowstone. Along the edge of the icy riverbank, a small fence designated our entry point. It was dangerous to walk down a river trail at dusk. Rocks and tree roots waited to trip me up. But the painter held my hand, making sure I'd know if there was ice, a stump, a quick turn from the ledge. He signaled when we reached the end. We tossed our coats, hats, and mittens beneath a bench and dashed to the river's rocky edge. Steam rose from the surface where a hot spring geyser merged with the current of snow runoff. We tiptoed over pebbles and, with cold wind at our backs, lowered ourselves into the pooling water. If you get too close to the source, you will burn. If you get too far from the source, you will freeze. Death winks at every turn. But if you find the sweet spot and surrender where the icy flows mingle with boiling water, you will be set free. Crests of baptismal spring poured over our shoulders, tugged at our feet, and threatened to take us along. Each exhale formed its own mystery. The body begins to know itself as water. Old skin dissolves. Let it go and rise from the mist in a new one.
Thank you. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
In a piece about going to a hot springs hotel pool bar, you're in the bar and you are attempting to chat with a group of guys and listening to a new digital jukebox. And you write about wanting one of the old jukeboxes. You write, "I want the kind of jukebox that will help me remember that thing, to remember the scent that I was supposed to be following." If The Spring, this book, was you following a scent, the scent of the painter, the scent that may have led you through your grief to the other side, what scent are you following now that your book has been published?
I'm following the scent of life. I'm following the scent of art. I'm following the dreams that still come to me in the night. I'm following the things that I believe are potent and waiting to be known.
Annie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Lauren. It's such an honor to be on this show. I'm a longtime listener of The Right Question and feel absolutely delighted to be in conversation with you here.
Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. The show is produced by Peter Hoag and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Our recording engineer is Beth Ann Osteen. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008, and thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.